We are very concerned that he seems to be fixated on you, your family, and those around you. Laura looked intently at Jackman, her eyes glistening with anxiety.
We believe that his game is reaching its climax. One more death, perhaps, and then his long-running production will be complete. Our concern is that he'll find it impossible to give up killing. His self-belief is most likely increasing, and by now he probably thinks he is omnipotent.
And so, continued Sam, he'll need a new cause, a new raison d'être. Me?
Jackman looked at the two of them.
Laura nodded.
It seems that way. We know how well this man is able to prey on his victims' vulnerabilities. So, we think you should identify your Achilles' heel and that of everyone around you.
We rather knew this, didn't we?
Jackman said.
From the way he destroyed Sarah and Suri.
True, said Sam. But, as you know, serial killers develop in different ways. Some progress and become even more organized, whereas others unravel, become disorganized, and finally make terrible mistakes. Whatever the case, they do change with every new killing.
And our man?
Asked Jackman tentatively. This is conjecture based on case histories, but we think he'll abandon the method of making the target take their own life.
Laura was as serious as Jackman had ever seen her.
We think he'll continue to identify those closest to the principal victim, and then make the victim watch them suffer.
I'm not sure I understand you, Jackman said. You mean, for example, sit my mother down and make her watch as he burns down her stables with the horses inside?
Sam nodded slowly.
Exactly. So you really need to identify all the things that you and yours really treasure, and do it quickly, because unless you catch this man soon, he could start to stage some very nasty scenarios.
Jackman sank back in his chair.
Marie was right, then. I said he was driven by hate, but she said no. It was love that motivated him. More of a case of how to manipulate that love, Sam said. But, yes, that's quite correct.
While his imagination took flight, the phone rang.
Yes, Jackman here.
It was Robbie.
I'm sorry to bother you, sir, but you really have to come and see this.
He's killed again. It wasn't a question.
Robbie hesitated.
Yes, sir, but it's different from the other deaths. And this time, he's left you a personal account of exactly why he did it.
I'm on my way.
Laura and Sam were staring at him.
Are you coming with me? He asked. I warn you, it won't be pleasant.
They nodded. Maybe it's time we see for ourselves just what this man is capable of.
Jackman wasn't so certain, but he needed their help. He needed all the help he could get. Chapter 27.
What is this place? Asked Laura in a low voice.
Jackman looked through the car window at the decrepit building's ornate facade. A for sale sign hung drunkenly from a wooden post at the entrance. It's the old auction house. It's been on the market for a long time. I'm surprised developers haven't snapped it up by now.
Robbie was beckoning to him from the doorway. He was already wearing a protective coverall, and around him police constables had set up a perimeter and were rolling out blue and white cordoning tape.
Uniform are underway, sir. They've set up a log, but you are the first here.
He glanced anxiously to Laura and Sam waiting in the background.
Not sure that's a good idea.
He paused.
With respect, sir.
We need them, Robbie. We really do need their professional opinion.
Robbie shrugged.
It's pretty awful in there.
Then Jackman saw Max waiting by the entrance. His face was drawn and pale, and his shoulders drooped. Jackman couldn't recall seeing the usually enthusiastic young detective look so withdrawn and miserable.
He exhaled. Okay, Robbie, tell me what's occurred. Maybe he should take a look before he allowed the other two in.
A hanging, sir. They're never pretty, are they?
Hangings were horrible, especially if not carried out correctly. Few were. And?
It's difficult to work the scene out, sir. We only had a brief look because we didn't want to compromise it. But he has set up the old auction floor like a courtroom. It looks as though the dead man has been tried, found guilty, and then executed.
Jackman turned to Laura and Sam. Wait here for a moment. I need to see how we tackle this. Sam looked at him.
You don't have to spare us, Jackman. We've both seen some pretty horrific things in our time.
Fair enough, but I'll still need to check that we won't be contaminating the scene. Meanwhile, you can get suited up. Uniform have brought protective overalls.
Jackman took one from a pile by the entrance door and pulled it on. Max still hadn't spoken.
You okay, my friend?
Jackman asked.
Max gave a feeble nod.
I just wish it was all over, boss. This maniac is tearing us to bits.
Jackman guessed he was thinking of Rosie.
Then we need to get him, don't we?
Robbie said he left something for me. Hopefully, if he's getting cocky, he may have given something away.
He touched the young man's arm.
Are you up to going back in?
Max seemed to rally.
Of course, sir.
He turned and led the way.
What struck him immediately was how staged the scene was.
Jackman remembered the headmaster saying that Alistair Ashcroft was happiest when acting in school productions.
Her forensics given us an ETA, Max.
Max glanced at his watch.
Should be here shortly, boss.
He looked around the big room.
This psycho is really something, isn't he, sir?
Jackman nodded.
I'll say.
The judge's bench was placed on the old auctioneer's platform. Behind it, the killer had placed a high-backed carved chair, and on the bench rested a gavel, a curled, powdered wig, and a square of black material.
The black cap, whispered Jackman. The judge used to place it over his wig to pronounce the death sentence.
Max grunted. Jackman turned slowly, noting that the killer had formed a dock for his prisoner out of three heavy bookcases. One formed the front of the dock, and the others formed the sides. In the middle was a chair with straps over the arms where the accused man would have sat. Two tables sat on either side of the well of the room, one for the prosecuting team, and one for the defense. Each had a neat pile of papers on it. Finally, in the center were a chair and a smaller table, no doubt for the clerk of the court. Off to the left of the courtroom, an area had been curtained off with two tall room dividers and some heavy drapes. It was open at the front, but inside it was shadowy, almost cell-like, which was most likely the intention. Behind this was a flight of stairs leading to a viewing gallery. It was from here that the man had been pushed, so as to drop down into his darkened death chamber. Jackman steeled himself to look. He noted that the man had been executed without the customary use of a hood, his hands tied behind his back, and his ankles bound together. The original design of the auction house had contributed greatly to the assembly of a very simple and effective gallows. Running the length of the high roof was a series of crisscross beams and old timber trusses. Alistair had said, he had patience, and he hadn't been lying. It must have taken forever to find the perfect place for his trial and execution.
Who found him, Max?
The estate agent who's dealing with the sale of this dump. Poor bloke.
Uniform have got him outside in one of their cars. He was shaking like a leaf.
Was it a routine property check, do you know?
No, boss. Someone made an anonymous phone call saying they thought squatters had got in.
Oh man, I should think. Drawing attention to his handiwork.
He dragged his eyes back to the dead man. It was hard to gauge much about him. His mousy hair was almost shoulder length,
and the pale face was distorted by the thick purple tongue protruding from his mouth. Jackman stared at his orange clothing.
"Fancy dress hire. Convict costume," Max said flatly. "He thought of everything. I wonder."
Jackman was thinking of court records.
"We'd better leave it all for forensics. I should think the photographer will have a field day with this particular crime scene."
He thought of Ella. Rory had often commented that Ella had a natural talent for picking out tiny details.
"I wonder if he's known to us. Not really looking his best, but I can't say I've seen him around, boss."
Max gave a weak smile.
"But you needn't fret over his identity. The killer left full details of who, how, and why. Robbie and I had a brief look at the papers on the desks over there. He's been preparing this for years, I'd say."
"Wonderful."
Jackman shook his head. "I can't wait to get my eyes on that."
"What about your two psychological profilers, boss? Are you going to let them in?"
"As far as Rory will allow, until the scene has been forensically swept. They've seen bad stuff before."
With a last look at the hanging man, Jackman went to find Sam and Laura. Rory Wilkinson spent some 30 minutes in the ersatz courtroom, and almost as long with the dead man. Finally, he walked back to the waiting Jackman.
"Remarkable. The attention to detail is quite astounding. If he wasn't an arch-criminal, I'd love a long natter over a G&T.
He looked at Jackman's stony expression and added,
"Hypothetically, of course."
"Sorry, Rory, but after what he's done, I couldn't even imagine meeting him socially," Jackman said.
"No, it's me that should apologize. That was thoughtless. David is always telling me that I should learn to think before I open my mouth."
Jackman smiled. Rory looked exactly like his mother's Labrador when he'd been caught chewing a slipper.
"I'm not usually this touchy, but this guy has wound me up tight as a drum."
"Hardly surprising, is it? But joking apart, the amount of thought that went into this little pantomime is quite amazing. He even tied the perfect hangman's knot and positioned it in exactly the right place. He managed to successfully fracture the second cervical vertebra, something that is very uncommon indeed, other than in judicial hangings. Plus, he had to calculate the distance of the drop, and to do that he needed the victim's height and weight."
Rory let out a long breath.
"Get it wrong, with too little drop and your condemned man strangles. Too far, and decapitation has been recorded. His preparation was textbook."
"Some small mercy for the deceased, I suppose," Jackman said.
"And I'm certain he was sedated. There are needle marks on his right wrist, and I'm thinking that was simply to facilitate getting him up the stairs, from where he could be pushed. Prior to that, I'm sure he was very much aware of exactly what was going on."
Jackman nodded.
"Alistair Ashcroft has clearly waited a long time for this moment, and taken an extraordinary amount of care in its preparation. He's hardly likely to make things easy for his victim. What I want to know is, who is the hanged man, and what did he do to deserve execution?"
Rory glanced at the prosecutor's table.
"I'm sure you already know all those details have been provided for you, by way of some pseudo-legal documents. Not only that, your killer seems to have made a recording, hopefully of the trial."
Jackman breathed a sigh of relief. That was exactly what he wanted to know.
"You can guess what I'm going to ask now, can't you?"
Rory smiled.
"The photographer has completed his work, and my team are ready to start bagging the evidence. But if you would like to have a brief glance at the documents, and although this is very unorthodox, for the sake of your investigation, I'm going to let you listen to the recording before it gets bagged and tagged for continuity. It's evidence, and the killer had to touch it to use it, so we have to follow protocol with this one."
"You're a diamond, Rory Wilkinson."
"I'm forgiven."
"Totally. I'd have you and your runaway mouth no other way. You're priceless."
"Could I have that in writing for David?"
"My pleasure. Now,"
he looked around.
"I see that Marie has just arrived. I'll get her and the others to listen in, if that's okay."
Of course. But just you and Marie in the room, if you don't mind. You guys know the drill. Gloves and touch as little as possible. The others can wait where they are, and I'll turn the recording on when you're ready. Rory held up a hand. But first, I need to get that poor man down from the gibbet.
Jackman went over to Marie, who was standing looking around in shocked disbelief.
"And now we are going to hear what this is all about?" she asked.
"Just as soon as Rory has dealt with the deceased."
Marie pulled out her smartphone.
"I'm asking you not to look if I just happen to accidentally record what we're going to hear."
Jackman turned away. "I didn't hear that."
They didn't have long to wait. Jackman and Marie went to the prosecutor's table and looked at the top sheet of paper.
It read, "The Crown versus Blake."
Beneath it were several typed sheets that appeared to be the prosecution's opening statement, and beneath that, a long witness testimony. Marie then looked at the papers on the defense's table and let out a small, "Oh." All the papers were blank, and there were no names under the heading, "Witnesses for the Defense." Jackman shook his head.
"Somewhat biased in the favor of the prosecution, wouldn't you say?"
Rory switched on the recording. A clear, well-educated voice, obviously that of the clerk of the court, announced,
"All rise. This court is now in session. The Honorable Judge Ashcroft presiding. Your Honor, today's case is the Crown versus Blake."
Marie looked at Jackman and raised her eyebrows. The clerk then asked,
"Can you confirm that your name is John Edward Blake?"
There was a scuffling sound, but no answer. The clerk repeated the question, and finally, a shaky voice mumbled,
"Yes."
"John Edward Blake, you are charged that on the 8th day of June, 1995, you did willfully rape and murder Lindsay Beth Ashcroft. How do you plead, guilty or not guilty?"
Once again, they heard the sounds of a struggle. Jackman could envisage the man in the dock fighting to free himself. After a while, a different voice cried out,
"You're mad. I never killed anyone."
"Liar."
The words were screamed so loud, they all jumped. From that moment, Alistair Ashcroft seemed to abandon his carefully staged courtroom procedure, and instead of calmly presenting his opening statement, unleashed a volley of accusations that Jackman and the others found hard to follow. As the rant continued, Jackman gradually came to realize that if Ashcroft was telling the truth, his lovely sister-in-law Sarah and her closest friend Suri had made a terrible mistake all those years ago. And what was worse, Brendan Simmons really had been innocent. As Ashcroft's story unfolded, Jackman began to feel something approaching despair. Initially, the accused man, John Blake, denied everything or refused to answer the accusations against him. Then, as the minutes ticked by, they could hear him being slowly worn down by Ashcroft's unrelenting pressure. Finally, sniveling and pleading to be set free, he admitted the lot. Jackman and Marie, and their colleagues gathered in the doorway, listened in shocked silence, while the rage in Ashcroft's voice abated. Abruptly, his voice changed to a local accent, and now he was the foreman of the jury, and he was finding the man guilty. Just as quickly, Ashcroft reassumed his judicial tone. They heard the judge pass sentence, and the other man screaming and pleading to be released from this madness. It was hard to listen to. Ashcroft had left the recording running while he sedated the prisoner, and then forced him up the stairs. The last thing they heard was the sudden creak of the rope as Blake's weight snapped his own neck. Jackman swallowed hard. The recording ended. No one spoke, and they all trooped out into the fresh air. Darkness was falling and he was chilled to the bone. It would be hours before forensics were finished, and right now he needed to go over everything they had heard with his team.
Back to the station, everyone. And Sam and Laura too, if that's okay. We need to talk this through.
He thought the group looked like mannequins posed in some dark tableau. They stood as if unable to move, clearly shocked to the core by what they had just heard. Then, still silent, they nodded and began to drift away towards their respective vehicles.
Max? Jackman called the young detective back.
He had noticed Robbie Melton giving a brief worried glance in Max's direction when he had asked them all to return to the station.
You should get home, Max.
I know how worried you are about Rosie. You can catch up in the morning.
Max took a deep breath.
No, sir. I'll see this through.
Jackman stared at him, touched by his loyalty.
I appreciate your devotion to duty, detective. But on this occasion, I really think you should go home. No, sir, said Max doggedly. As you said earlier, we have to catch this man before he does any more damage. I'll go, but only after your debriefing.
Jackman watched Max walk back to join Robbie, realizing, perhaps for the first time, just how deep the young man's feelings were for Rosie McKeldry. Max's divided loyalties were painful to see. Then Laura's words came back to him, reminding him that he should look carefully at the weak points of those around him. There was no doubt as to Max Cohen's Achilles heel.
Where was this all going to end?
Chapter 28. As soon as they returned to base, Jackman had Robbie look for the name John Edward Blake on the police national computer. Finding nothing, he checked local intelligence and then, in desperation, Googled him and checked on social media. He found him there.
Hey, this guy was one of the Simmons family's greatest adversaries. He was adamant that Brendan was guilty and he was interviewed at the time of Lindsay's death. He lived in the same village and apparently knew her quite well.
Robbie stared at his monitor screen.
Looks like he ran an opposing campaign group that used to turn up at Sheila Simmons' demonstrations and heckle them.
Jackman frowned. If he really was the man who killed Lindsay, then he was obviously trying to keep the blame pinned firmly on Brendan. They had all gathered in the CID room and sat around with cups of coffee and tea, attempting to make sense of what they had heard. Jackman stared into his coffee.
The bottom line is that on the night of Lindsay's murder, there were three sets of people in the woods watching her and Brendan. Sarah and Suri, Lindsay's little brother Alistair, and John Blake. Sarah and her friend didn't lie. They reported exactly what they saw, but they didn't see it all.
The only one to see the whole horrible incident was a small, disturbed boy, Alistair Ashcroft, Marie said quietly.
Little brother watched Brendan leave his sister in the clearing, and then saw John step out of the trees and approach her. He saw him argue with her, shouting that she wouldn't let him touch her, but she let the Simmons boy go all the way. Bitterly jealous, he forced himself upon her, and when she resisted, he killed her. Possibly killing her was never his aim, maybe he was trying to stop her screaming, but whatever. He lost it and killed her.
Jackman sat back.
And little Al saw the whole thing, and totally traumatized, made the big mistake of telling his father.
Robbie sounded glum. Laura was swirling her tea around in her mug.
Did I gather correctly from the recording that Daddy Ashcroft was business partners with John Blake's father?
Jackman nodded.
And I think we can safely assume that there was no way Charles Ashcroft was going to have his lucrative business ventures ruined, which is why he sent the boy away before he could tell anyone else.
What a heartless bastard, murmured Max. And look at the chaos his decision caused. 22 years later, his demented son is stalking the streets of Sultan, killing anyone who was involved in that cock-up of a trial.
Well, he has concluded his vendetta, Sam added. This trial and judgment was certainly his coup de grâce. The thing is, and I mentioned this earlier, I don't think he'll be able to stop killing now.
Laura sighed. I agree with you. From his mood swings during that trial, going from controlled to manic and back again in a matter of seconds, I think he's becoming disorganized.
Sam nodded vehemently.
And that is a very nasty supposition indeed. On the one hand, he might get overconfident and hence sloppy, which could help you catch him, but on the other hand, he'll be volatile and unpredictable, which could make him very dangerous indeed.
More dangerous than this? Marie said.
No one spoke.
Going back to John Blake, Robbie rubbed his chin thoughtfully. We should check the whole transcript of the real trial of Brendan Simmons. I only read through it briefly, but there were a dozen character witness statements, and I don't recall seeing Blake's name.
Me neither, added Max. Shall I pull it up, sir?
Jackman shook his head. Not tonight. And since the original verdict was wrong, it won't help us catch this killer. Right now, I want all of you to get home. This meeting was just to consolidate our recollections of what we heard. Until we get an official working copy of that recording, it's all we have to go on.
Jackman was careful not to look at Marie or the smartphone that was in her hand. All I keep hearing is the creak of that rope, Laura said softly. I think I'll go on hearing it until the day I die.
Jackman bitterly regretted having allowed her to be there. If she had nightmares, it would be his fault. And that wasn't what he wished for Laura Archer. I'm sorry, he said helplessly. I should never...
Stop right there.
Her tone was sharp. I'm a professional, Jackman. I'll deal with it. As everyone finally pulled on their coats and jackets, Jackman's eyes stayed on Laura, one of his vulnerabilities.
What time do you call this?
Max opened his mouth to make excuses, then saw a glint of amusement in Beverly's eyes. Rosie's sister had a powerful personality, and to tell the truth, she scared him a bit.
Bad night, he muttered,
wanting only to get past her and see Rosie.
We've been waiting up for you. I thought you were never coming home.
He stood still.
Is Rosie worse?
Bev laughed.
No, she's a whole lot better.
Then...
Max was tired and confused.
She wants to talk to you, Max, and I'm off to bed. See you in the morning.
He found Rosie curled up on the sofa, her legs tucked up underneath her, cradling a big mug of hot chocolate.
Are you?
He bent and gave her a kiss.
Bev says you're feeling a bit better.
Rosie patted the seat next to her, and he flopped down, thankfully. She seemed much more like her old self, but he was wary of asking too many questions. Instead, he took the mug from her, placed it on the coffee table and took her hand. He squeezed it gently.
I'm really sorry I'm late, sweetheart. I wanted to be with you. Not working.
It's all right, Max. I know you have to work.
She squeezed his hand in return.
And I can guess what's happened, but for once I'm not going to ask. Instead,
she turned and looked into his eyes.
I found out why this case has upset me so badly.
She looked so intense that Max wondered if he was ready to hear what she had to say.
Apparently, pregnant women can react to things in a rather over-emotional way.
He reran the sentence several times before it made sense.
Pregnant? You are... We are...
Rosie smiled tentatively.
Yes, Max. You're going to be a father.
The smiles faded.
I just hope the news is...
It's the best thing ever!
He blurted out. He took hold of her in a tight embrace. Max came from a big family,
and his childhood had been happy. It hadn't been easy, being the youngest of so many, but he'd learned the importance of having a loving support network about you as a kid.
I couldn't be more delighted. I...
For once in his life, Max Cohen couldn't think of a thing to say.
I only did the test this morning. It was Beverly who thought of it. I never dreamed. I mean, we were so careful.
Except once.
Oh, yes. You mean that time in the...
Yep.
But just once and this happens?
Max could hardly believe it possible. It would turn their lives upside down. But he didn't mind at all.
His child. He smiled. It was like a blessing. All day I've been wondering how you'd take it. I thought you'd be pleased. I mean, you love kids and you're so good with them. But it will mean a lot of changes.
She looked down.
I could never, ever have an...
Don't even say the word. It's not going to happen.
Like the Cheshire Cat, Max's grin stretched from ear to ear.
You know what, Rosie McKeldry?
I think it's come at just the right time, don't you? Jackman was exhausted when he got back to Mill Corner. He pulled into his carport, got out and locked the car. It felt good just to unlock his big old wooden door, looking forward to seeing the things he loved. He wanted to escape the madness for a few hours and have some peace for a while.
Stand perfectly still, D.I. Jackman.
Jackman froze.
Not one move. Understand?
Jackman took a breath and tried to gather his scattered thoughts.
I understand.
Good.
Alistair Ashcroft stood in the shadows. Jackman heard a dull metallic click and knew what that meant. The gun's safety catch was off.
I don't want to hurt you. I just want to talk.
Ashcroft's tone was calm and reasonable.
And I just want you in my custody suite.
Spat Jackman. Ashcroft gave a low chuckle.
I'm sure you do. But it's not going to happen, and you know it.
Jackman said nothing for a moment.
Okay. We'll talk.
Ashcroft stepped onto the porch. The security light lit him up like a spotlight on an actor.
He looked vaguely familiar. Yes, it was the man from the CCTV footage. But there was something else, too. Jackman knew him from somewhere.
It doesn't matter who I was, who I became. All you need to know is who I am now. And you know that already.
Alistair Ashcroft.
Yes, I began life with that name, and then had it taken from me. But now, I'm back. That's all that matters.
What matters to me is that you drove Sarah and a lot of other people to take their own lives. You had no right to do that.
Jackman struggled to keep an even tone.
I had every right. The law, he snorted. The law failed Lindsay miserably, and it caused the death of an innocent boy. Brendan Simmons. I righted that wrong, Mr. Policeman. A wrong that you and your kind couldn't even see, though it was staring you in the face.
And why didn't you tell us? You saw what happened, for God's sake. If anyone was to blame, it was you.
In the silence that followed, Jackman thought he'd gone too far. He clenched his hands and waited for the shot, desperately regretting his words. Have you any idea what it's like to be a neglected and abused child, Rowan? No, of course you haven't. You had a mother who adored you. Your father wasn't around much, but you had everything you needed, and more. You were privileged, fortunate.
I wasn't.
Very nice woman, your mother, by the way. I liked her a lot. Jackman took a step towards Ashcroft, unable to prevent himself.
Think it through, Jackman. Not a single move, remember?
Jackman closed his eyes for a moment and tried to regain his composure.
Sensible man. Now, relax, and I'll tell you why I never spoke out.
I think I already know.
You were just a kid, and you'd just witnessed something too horrific for words.
Of course you weren't to blame. I shouldn't have said that. But I can never forgive you for what you've done to my nephews.
If they are strong, they will survive. After all, I survived.
Jackman wondered at what cost his survival had come.
They needed to pay. Everyone who had anything to do with that travesty of justice had to pay.
And now they have.
Indeed.
My God, you've just hanged a man. Don't you feel any remorse at all?
Alistair laughed. Why should I? Did he feel remorse for what he did? No, he didn't. Instead, he stood by while an innocent young man went to prison and subsequently died there. He got what he deserved.
Ignoring this, Jackman decided to chance a question.
There's something I don't understand. Your sister was dead, and there was nothing that would bring her back. It looks to me as if you were avenging Brendan's death rather than hers.
Brendan was the only person who was kind to me.
Even Lindsay was unkind sometimes, although I know she loved me deep down. But she made me promise.
Swear.
Promise what, Alistair?
Never to speak of what she and Brendan were planning to do. She made me swear.
As Ashcroft spoke these words, Jackman became aware of a change in his voice. All at once he sounded like a frightened child.
She said, oh, she said terrible things would happen to me. I believe she died because I followed her and spied on her.
But you told your father, and you hated him.
Jackman said,
he knew.
Ashcroft's voice trembled.
He took one look at me and just knew. And he beat me until I told him everything. I even told him they'd been planning on running away and taking me with them. I betrayed her.
He couldn't be sure, but Jackman thought Alistair Ashcroft was crying. That day, a small boy's hopes and dreams had all been shattered. Not only did he lose his sister, he lost his one chance of gaining a better life.
Then he sent you away,
Jackman said softly.
And then he died.
Now Ashcroft sounded almost gleeful.
And my new life began.
He paused.
Anyway, Jackman, I just thought it would be nice for us to meet face to face for once.
I'm going to leave you now, but we'll meet again. You can be sure of that.
How could he just let him walk away?
But Ashcroft was armed. Jackman felt helpless.
Who are you?
Ashcroft sighed. Work it out.
It will come to you as soon as I've gone.
But can't you understand? It doesn't matter.
How many more times do I have to tell you? I'm Alistair Ashcroft, and I'm your worst nightmare.
Close by, a motorbike engine roared into life, and Ashcroft was gone. With shaking hands, Jackman let himself into his house. He shut the door and locked it, and then poured himself a brandy.
Work it out. It will come to you as soon as I've gone.
The words rattled around in his head.
Why then? What had he meant?
Jackman swallowed a good third of the drink and exhaled loudly. Ashcroft had told him nothing that he didn't know or couldn't have worked out for himself. His visit had been all about power. Jackman took another mouthful of the brandy and saw, in his mind's eye, the tall, slim-hipped figure, clad in black.
It will come to you.
Jackman groaned and the glass almost fell from his fingers. When he uttered those words, Ashcroft's voice had taken on the slightest hint of an accent. Jackman grabbed his keys and rushed out into the night. He had to get back to the police station, fast. Annie, is she in tonight? He shouted at the officer at the desk.
Yes, sir, she's probably on the supers floor by now.
He took the stairs two at a time and found Annie in the conference room, emptying the waste paper bins.
Annie?
He looked around for Eric and Stefan.
On your own tonight?
Oh, hello, sir.
She pulled a face.
And until I get someone new, I could be like it all week.
Why?
He already knew the answer, but needed Annie to confirm it.
It's partly my own fault, really. Eric has been moved to another location, and Stefan's baby is so sick it needs full-time care. He's left, sir. Put in his notice yesterday. Oh, I will miss him. He was such a nice man, so kind and reliable.
And such a good actor, thought Jackman.
He thought about Stefan. Tall, slender, his dark hair smoothed back across his head, those dark almond eyes, and that trace of an accent that intrigued all the women. Alistair Ashcroft had been hiding here, in plain sight, working nights with the run of the police station.
I need to know where he lives, Annie. I've got to talk to him about something.
He said he lives in Cartoft Village, sir. I can give you my manager's number. If you ring him in the morning, he'll let you have it.
Oh, very clever. He lived in Cartoft, and he knew every person there.
Stefan wasn't one of them. He also knew exactly what he would find when he contacted the cleaning company. Stefan would be as clean as a whistle, would have sailed through the vetting process, had excellent references, and be known to be trustworthy and reliable. Of course he was clean. Alistair Ashcroft had never stepped outside the law in his life. Until he started killing people.
What is Stefan's surname, Annie?
Ash something, Ashton, no. Ashcroft, Stefan Ashcroft. I think he said his father was British and his mother was Polish.
Richard Stephen Ashcroft. How he must have laughed, seeing his name all over the whiteboards. God, he'd been playing them for fools for months. Jackman thanked Annie, went down to his office and rang Marie. She was at Gary's, telling him about what he'd been lucky to miss at the old auction house.
And catching food, no doubt,
Jackman added dryly.
Well, you know, while I'm here. But why the call, sir?
He told her about his visitor, and that he now knew who Ashcroft was. Marie gasped.
Of course. He has that long oval face that the headmaster talked about. It usually indicates something called Fragile X syndrome, if I remember rightly. I knew I'd seen him somewhere.
And he looks like Miles's picture of the bad man.
Exactly. And the man on the CCTV had thick, wavy, dark hair. Stefan's was always slicked down, giving him a very different appearance.
She was silent for a few seconds.
Are you all right, Jackman? Hell, you've just had a serial killer stick a gun in your face. That's pretty heavy stuff.
I'm fine. I'm just frustrated that there was no way of apprehending him. I had to let him go, and that really hurts. Oh, and he was on a motorcycle, by the way. I wish you'd been there. You'd probably have identified it from the engine noise.
Jackman hung up. His next call was to the super, to keep her up to speed, and let her see that he really was on top of things. They had identified the killer. That should earn him a few brownie points, at least. Finally, he rang Cam Walker.
The thing that gets me most is that he doesn't care two hoots that we know who he is. He says it doesn't matter, and I'm beginning to see what he means. At least we now have a face to put to the name. His cleaning company will have staff ID photographs, and so will we.
He'll have needed to have a pass issued by the station before he could come and go.
As I said, he doesn't care. He just wanted me to see what we're up against. He believes he is untouchable. But, he thought for a minute. Part of the time he sounded like Mr. Cool. And then at others, he was like an insecure child. It was creepy. And even though I wanted to tear him limb from limb, I couldn't help feeling sorry for him. Jackman pondered this. I wouldn't go that far. I mean, it's hard to understand how an abusive upbringing could screw up a little boy so badly. And then to have the extraordinary bad luck to witness his sister being murdered. I hate to state the obvious, but it's hardly surprising he's a mess. Jackman yawned.
I need to get home and get some sleep, Cam.
Mightn't it be a good idea to get Uniform to go with you, just to check your place out? Ashcroft has got you well and truly in his sights, hasn't he? Jackman was silent for a moment, thinking.
No, he won't be back tonight. He's delivered his message. He just wanted me to see my adversary, my nemesis, close up.
You're welcome to stay with us for as long as you want. Jackman smiled. Cam Walker was a kind and thoughtful man.
I'll be fine, Cam, honest. But thanks, I appreciate it.
If you're sure...
I'm sure. I'll see you tomorrow.
As he hung up, he wondered if he wasn't being a little too glib. But he knew he was right. For tonight, at least, he would be safe.
Alistair Ashcroft prepared for bed, thinking over his meeting with Jackman. It had gone exactly to plan. He now saw Jackman in a different light, as an adversary, an opponent in a deadly game of chess. He decided that he quite liked Jackman. He had admired his spirit. Even when looking down the barrel of a gun, he had been prepared to have a go in order to protect someone he loved. And he didn't mince his words. He liked that, too. After his talk to Jackman, he had had a desperate urge to go out to his lonely place on the marsh edge, but instead had come home and taken a long hot shower. He looked around him. They wouldn't find him here. Not unless he wanted them to. But for now he needed a sanctuary. He walked barefoot across the thick pile carpet to his bed and pulled back the covers. He would use the coming nighttime hours to plan his next move in detail. He had his target already lined up, and his research was pretty well complete. Now for the timetable. His latest victim's countdown to death. He settled back against the pillows and smiled.
Chapter 29. Jackman arrived at work early and found Max already there. He appeared to be a very different Max from the one he'd left the night before.
Sorry to tackle you so early, sir, but could I have a word before everyone gets in?
Intrigued, Jackman held open his office door. He could only think that Rosie was very much recovered. Max sat down.
Thing is, sir, I expect you were as puzzled as I was about how come Rosie took that last call we had so badly. The one to the Whitman twins' murder scene.
Jackman nodded.
It was a shock to see her so badly affected, but it does happen. We all have one case that does us in.
Max wriggled in his seat, apparently unsure how to proceed.
Well, it wasn't just that. Like, well, we didn't know.
Max, get to the point.
She's pregnant, sir. We're going to have a baby. That's why she was all over the place.
Jackman's mouth fell open. This wasn't what he'd been expecting.
I say. Yes. Isn't it fantastic?
Max's broadly beaming face said it all.
Congratulations, Max. I'm getting vibes that this isn't exactly unwelcome news. It wasn't planned, sir, far from it, but now it's happening, I couldn't be happier.
That's plain to see.
Jackman smiled warmly at him.
So, what are your plans?
The first thing we're going to do is get married, sir, ASAP. We both want that. These killings have really put things into perspective for us. Even without a child, we've decided that we make a good team. So why not make it an official one? Max gulped.
I love it a bit, sir.
That's a pretty good reason for tying the knot. And after that?
We need to think about that.
But we've got plenty of time. We both love our jobs, and if we can, we'll both keep working, even if one of us has to stand down for a while. We've both got supportive families, so we'll work out what's best for us all. He paused, still grinning. We just wanted you to know first, sir, before I tell the world.
Thank you, Max. I appreciate it.
Jackman suddenly thought of Ashcroft and was overcome by a feeling of dread. But I'm going to make a suggestion, and I hope this doesn't mess up your plans. I think you should keep this news to your very closest friends for a short while.
Sir?
His face fell. Well, until we know more about Alistair Ashcroft, I really think this is something you should keep very quiet indeed. Max frowned, and then the penny dropped.
Oh, hell. I've been so excited that I forgot how he works. He plays on vulnerabilities, doesn't he?
Exactly, Max. So you see what I mean.
I'll ring Rosie. I'll try not to scare her, but I'll make sure she doesn't do anything silly like stick it on Facebook.
Very sensible. And Max, I'm thrilled for you.
Thanks, sir.
Max stood up. I'll tell the Sarge. I guess the others can wait a while. It's very early days. Oh, and Rosie says that hopefully she'll be back next week. She feels so much better since she heard the news.
We'll be very happy to have her back. But she needs the FMO's okay first.
She knows that, sir. We'll see how she goes. Max, you do know you're going to have to be a damn good actor over the next few days, don't you? Right now, you look like the cat that got the cream.
Well, that won't be quite so easy, but if anyone asks, I guess I'll just say I'm happy that Rosie's feeling much better.
After Max left, Jackman sat on, worrying about the way things were proceeding. Sam and Laura had both warned him that Ashcroft could change the way he operated and begin to take and destroy the things people close to him loved. That could be precious items or precious loved ones. Everyone was vulnerable. Was Max most vulnerable of all? Charlie Button was deep in conversation with Robbie.
What I don't get, he was saying, is why there was no forensic evidence linking John Blake to the murder scene. If he killed Lindsay, surely there would have been something left behind.
Robbie shrugged.
Think about it, mate. It was 22 years ago. Plus they had two witnesses who not only testified to seeing Lindsay and Brendan together, they also saw him leaving the clearing alone.
Marie was listening in. Add to that the fact that Brendan's DNA was all over Lindsay, and the prosecution would have a very strong case indeed. And from what I've read about the trial, Philip Seaton QC was hot as mustard, so why look any further? Robbie added.
But we could now, with all the new techniques, Charlie persisted.
Marie shook her head.
Charlie, that case is over. Everyone involved in that whole terrible mess is dead, except Alistair Ashcroft.
Who is our priority now, not Lindsay?
It's Alistair we have to concentrate all our energies into finding.
She looked at Charlie's rather peeved expression.
One person we will tell is Sheila Simmons. It wouldn't stand up in court.
After all, Blake's taped confession was extracted under duress, but she would be able to rest knowing that we all believed it to be true. She smiled at Charlie. And who knows? If the family keep pushing, someone might just open up the old inquiry in order to give Brendan a posthumous pardon. But right now, we have a killer to catch, right? Charlie smiled back.
I know that, Sarge. I just hate injustice in any form.
That's why we do what we do, kiddo, Robbie said. Gary walked in.
Sarge, I've just heard from Uniform that they went to the address we were given for Stefan Ashcroft, and it's a bedsit in a back street of Salton. All they found was a camp bed, a table and a chair, a phone with an answer phone, a kettle and a mini fridge. It's certainly not been lived in. Ashcroft obviously used it to validate his identity and for mail and to pick up phone messages for Stefan.
And he won't use the place again, Marie puffed out her cheeks.
Not that we expected anything else. None of them heard Jackman approach.
Well, he must live somewhere. Is that place also hidden in plain sight? Maybe it's right here in Sultan-le-Fen.
Registered to another one of his personas? Asked Robbie.
He said he was now Alistair Ashcroft again, and all the other names were finished with. But was he lying? Anyway, right now it's time for daily orders.
Jackman gave the gathered officers the details of the scene at the old auction house the night before, and then what had transpired at Mill Corner. Marie listened, or rather watched. She thought Jackman looked worried. Perhaps his run-in with Alistair had shaken him more than he was admitting.
So I want you to be fully aware of the kind of man we're dealing with, and on no account should you underestimate him. At the 4 o'clock meeting, I'm going to ask Laura Archer to give you a brief rundown of how we can expect his behaviour patterns to evolve as the case goes on. But right now...
Jackman stooped and picked up a handful of sheets of plain A4 paper and passed them round.
This might seem odd, but to protect your privacy, I'm going to ask each of you to write down a list of names for me. Only Marie, Laura Archer, and myself will see these names, and we'll treat them in the strictest confidence.
There's no nice way to put this. Ashcroft targets the things and the people we love.
I need to know anyone or anything that each of you holds dear. That includes your beloved granny, your new puppy, your collection of silver teapots, or your secret lover. And please, don't hide anything. These pages will be destroyed as soon as we have Ashcroft locked away. I just need to know your vulnerabilities, understood?
Looking at each other, everyone took a sheet of paper.
Do it now. Think carefully about it, and then bring them to my office immediately. And someone must be responsible for making sure anyone who's not present does the same.
He ended the meeting, and Marie followed him into his office.
You seem on edge, boss. Is it your late-night visitor?
It unnerved me, all right. At one point, I thought I'd pushed him too far. I really believed.
He shook his head.
He had a gun trained on you, sir.
Lord, you had every right to shit your pants.
Jackman gave her a tired smile.
Didn't get that far, thank goodness. But there was something really disturbing about him. It was the way he changed his mood and his voice.
And some of what he said was totally believable. You start to get drawn in, to almost feel some kind of sympathy for him.
Then the next moment he says something so callous that you want to rip him to pieces.
A bit like the recording from his kangaroo court.
Laura Archer stood in the doorway.
Sorry, wasn't eavesdropping. I just wanted to let you finish.
Come on in, Laura.
Jackman smiled at her, and Marie again sensed that tiny sizzle of electricity in the air.
She couldn't wait to read Laura's list.
Laura looked immaculate, as she always did, this time in a soft oxblood red leather jacket and slim-fit grey plaid pants. Unlike Marie's biker jacket, this one was a simple zip-up bomber with a baseball collar. Marie reckoned it must have set her back close to 500 quid.
Though Laura would look $1 million in a black bin bag. I've asked Laura to work with us for a while, Marie, to try and get a handle on what Alistair's next move might be.
Excellent.
Marie smiled at Laura. Gary arrived carrying a sheaf of papers.
The first ones to be handed in, sir. Thought you might like these to be getting on with.
He grinned at Marie.
And I haven't peeked, honest.
Thanks, Gary.
Jackman lay them face down on his desk.
Feels a little like voyeurism, but we need to do it.
He looked at Laura and Marie.
We have to assume that because he worked here for so long, he knows a lot of the staff already.
As Stefan, he mainly worked nights, but we often do early shifts. He would have had plenty of access to overheard conversations and all sorts of unofficial information about us.
Sam and I talked long into the night about this man, Laura said, and we came to the conclusion that we have absolutely no idea how he's going to evolve.
As we said, he's complex. He's still showing signs of the dark triad, and he could be the product of a lethal combination of psychoses. We know how he has functioned before, but we are frightened that he might just step outside the box.
Marie stared at her.
And change his MO completely? He has grown more confident with every death, and I think his Crown versus Blake performance will have caused it to escalate further. We're sure he believes that you'll never catch him, unless he decides it's time for that to happen.
He said as much when he made his house call last night.
Jackman looked pensive.
I told him I wanted to see him in my custody suite, and he said he was sure I did, but that wasn't going to happen.
But don't forget,
Laura leaned forward.
You mustn't buy into that. He has an inflated opinion of himself, and he's as liable as anyone to make mistakes.
So, down to good old-fashioned police work, is that what will catch him? Asked Marie. It's caught a whole lot of other killers who thought they were untouchable, said Jackman. I'm sure that's what'll stop him in the end. He picked up the papers and divided them between the three of them. Let's see what we have here.
They studied the papers in silence. As she read, Marie gradually began to feel overwhelmed by the enormity of what they were up against. She put her pages on the desk and shook her head. This is impossible. So many vulnerabilities, and our little cuckoo in the nest could be aware of all of them. A lot can be discarded, said Laura calmly. If he continues as he has before, he is driven by the manipulation of intense love. She pointed to the lists. He won't be even mildly interested in most of this. He's after intense emotion. She paused. And justice. Sam disagrees with me on this, but I still think he needs a cause of some kind to make what he does acceptable to himself. I think he needs to be the avenging dark angel, the damaged child now grown up and fighting for justice.
Jackman's gaze slid aside, and Marie caught a glint of something in his eyes. Was that fear?
Is anything in particular worrying you, boss?
Jackman took a while to respond. He'll need to know, although I've told Max not to mention it to anyone other than his closest family. He and Rosie are expecting a baby.
Her initial delight vanished in a second.
What could be more vulnerable than a new baby? But Alistair does not know this. It was only confirmed last night, and it has to stay well under wraps. That's why Max hasn't written it down. He turned to Laura. I'm assuming this is exactly the kind of thing you're talking about.
She nodded.
Gary brought another batch of papers, and Marie really had to concentrate. The news about Max and Rosie had left her with a head full of questions. With an effort, she pushed them aside.
It's interesting how some people have listed a whole load of people and things, and some are like this one.
Marie held up Gary's paper. On it, he had simply written, The Team. Jackman smiled at her. The team features heavily in a lot of these, but yours mentions someone called Harvey. Who's Harvey? Marie blushed.
My bike. My Suzuki Hayabusa. I call it Harvey.
Alistair Ashcroft rides a bike too, Marie. Maybe it's called Roxanne or Flossie or something. They laughed,